We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. This episode is, of course, brought to you by you. Yes, you! The fine people who are supporting the Patreon. You make all of this possible. Aren't you generous and smart and handsome? Aren't you mindful? So very mindful. Supporting the bullshit arts that is this. Because, you know, I don't know if you know this, they don't give grants for this. Whatever this is, there isn't a grant category for it. So thank you. If you would like to also support the bullshit arts, please do join up with our Patreon. We have a number of tiers that you could join on. That's patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. But you guys cannot do it alone, and nor should you. That would be an unreasonable expectation. So, it's about time for some of our other sponsors to get a bit of a spotlight. First, we are starting with International Chocolate Day. Yes, International Chocolate Day. Yum, yum. Celebrate this wondrous creation that is chocolate. Be it a delicious Belgian dark chocolate, or, if you're brave enough to endure such a thing, a corrosive American chocolate. Ugh. You deserve a treat. I mean, not if you're eating an American chocolate, that's not a treat. But you deserve a treat, a chocolatey treat. Celebrate this momentous day by partaking in one of many classic chocolate-based activities, like finding an egg that's been hidden for, at this point, it's got to be on 6 months for now, but hey, that'll be fun. Or maybe you can celebrate by contracting diabetes. Or simply kill Echidna Chocolate River. All fun-based chocolate activities that you can indulge this International Chocolate Day. Because life is like a chocolate factory. You never know how you will be hideously maimed. And of course, we couldn't do this all without our final sponsor, International Day for the Preservation of the Ozone Layer. We're going to celebrate the only way we know how, the only way the G20 countries know how, and that is to fly all of your friends to a third location, if possible, make it an oil-rich nation who refuses to give up their power that was unduly gained by investing in fossil fuels and only fossil fuels. Make your entire team fly there on multiple planes. Give very verbose talks. Give speeches to large, empty rooms. Water down some non-binding agreements because, hey, the wording of a non-binding agreement is not going to tell you how to celebrate International Day for Preserving the Ozone Layer, goddammit. And then end that day by changing nothing. Hey, you'll always have those photos that you took on that very special day. You can store them somewhere on some kind of cloud storage and then never look at them again. Thus adding to the increasing effect of global warming and lowering the effectiveness of the ozone layer. We all celebrate how we can. But of course, none of this would be possible at all without my own live shows. So, Wollongong, hey, hi, how are you? I'll be heading to you very soon with a show at the Side Door Theatre on September 21st. I will be doing my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, which is four true stories, a monkey bite, a bus trip across America, an arrest and a bugging. That is an award-winning show, and you should definitely come and check it out. Canberra, I will also be coming to you, and it will be for the very first time, Canberra. So I'll be performing at Smith's Alternative on September 27th with my show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a really good time. Albury, you're in luck. I'll be returning to Albury on September 28th with Wage Against the Machine, my storytelling show all about my old dodgy jobs, my $20,000 robo debt, and the time that I broke a 100-year-old roller coaster. So if you are in any of those places, if you know anybody in those places, if you can get to any of those places, feel free to come along and check out the show. I think that'll be a really fun time. And of course, we'll be doing the Melbourne Fringe. Yes, I am doing a run at the Melbourne Fringe for the first time in very many years. So I'm very curious to see how it all comes together. I'll be doing both of my shows. You heard right, both of my shows, Wage Against the Machine, and I got bit by a monkey once. Now, it's kind of a special thing we've got going on here because the Mission to Seafarers, which has generously put us up in their venue, they're not charging any venue fees, which means I can do my show the way I want to do it as a pay-what-you-can show. It's a very special thing that we don't often get to have here anywhere in Australia, let alone here in Melbourne. So if you haven't seen either of these shows, or if you have and you enjoyed them, feel free to come along this Melbourne Fringe, bring some friends, we'd love to fill up the venue, and you can pay whatever you think the show is worth. If you want to book a ticket in advance, you can do that on the Melbourne Fringe website. You can do free tickets in advance, or if you really are generous, you can do a pay in advance, and just lock yourself in a little seat and not have to worry about that at the end of the show. However, if you can't do that or if you don't want to, that's perfectly reasonable. Just come down to the show, see if there is a seat, and hopefully we'll be able to get you in. Until then, though, I will be the bearer of weird news. So, let's get into it. Let's start with the headlines. A Brazilian rancher was ordered to pay $50 million for damage to part of the Amazon rainforest and was ordered by a federal court in Brazil to pay compensation for the damage he had caused to the climate through illegal deforestation. The farmer was shocked and was overheard saying, "Man, just wait till that judge learns about the mining industry. He's gonna be so mad!" Obviously, he was caught off guard because normally, when some kind of corporation damages the Amazon, they get given lucrative government contracts. So, like, I can understand his dismay. Saudi Arabia and the International Olympic Committee have announced a 12-year agreement to host the new eSports Olympics starting in 2025. The IOC said the agreement had ensured that the Olympic values are respected, even more so than the usual Olympics, because nobody's going to be fucking in the eSports Olympic Village in Saudi Arabia. You hear me? Nobody. That's the law. Rupert Murdoch has declared print newspapers have as little as 15 years left. Quote, "With a lot of luck." Ugh, sounds grim. And I gotta be honest with you guys, with a lot of luck, Rupert will be done by the end of this year. Come on, world, come on, give us a good one. Like, just one. One would be really great, just for the whole world, one for the team, before the world collapses under the climate catastrophe that he helped create. I think it would only be fair, yeah? Japan has cracked down on the use of rideable electric suitcases amid a tourism boom, and now requires riders to wear safety equipment and have a driver's license. The problem started when a number of riders in the airport were seen throwing banana peels and turtle shells at the drivers behind them. The weird part is, throwing the items isn't so much the problem as it was bringing fruit and animal products through customs. The Mushroom Kingdom has strong quarantine rules, and you really gotta respect them. SpaceX is slated to launch a billionaire benefactor into orbit for the world's first private spacewalk. We're all hoping that SpaceX will give the level of attention and detail and safety that we've come to expect from companies like Boeing. Godspeed, everyone. Luxury goods holding company LVMH says its wine business took a 12% hit because people are too sad to buy champagne. And, you know, he's so very close. So very close. Let me help you out there, champ. If by too sad you mean too beaten down by the continuous greed and relentless increasing of prices while simultaneously driving down the value of the stagnating wage that we earn, while cutting back on the reliability of work in the first place, so you have to work two or maybe three jobs to have the purchasing power of one job in the old metric, then yeah, you've nailed it. There you go, champ. I fixed it for you. CrowdStrike, the cybersecurity firm behind the largest global computer meltdown in history, has seen that, yes, indeed, it was wrong. This whole thing was their fault, and they're going to make amends the old-fashioned way by offering all of its partners a $10 Uber Eats gift card as an apology. Oh, look under your chairs, everybody. It's a $10 voucher. Isn't that better than a pizza slice? Pretty good. $10 on Uber Eats. I mean, normally a company only offers up 2, maybe 3 pizzas between the entire company. This is $10 all on your own. If the cost of inflation wasn't so horrible, I could get the entire pizza to myself. According to a new analysis by insurance firm Parametrics, the outage costs Fortune 500 companies more than $5 billion in direct losses. And I, for one, would like to thank Comrade CrowdStrike and welcome them to the revolution. Souvenirs depicting Pablo Escobar could be banned in Colombia if legislators approve a bill introduced in Congress. The bill proposes fines of up to $170 for vendors who sell merchandise that depicts Escobar and other convicted criminals. So good news for tourists looking to get souvenirs of a hardened cartel who exploited the local people for capital gain. You can still get your United Fruit, Chiquita Banana, and CIA t-shirts and bobbleheads. They'll be available at all stores that used to sell Pablo Escobar. And don't forget to get your collector's edition Alan Dulles and Ike Eisenhower Consolidating Foreign Power action figures. A US judge has ruled Google broke the law over online searches and related ads by creating a monopoly. And I can see why they'd be pissed. I hate monopoly. It's tedious, time-consuming, it causes fights, and I never get to beat a race car! Could be worse though. Bing could have created a Donald Trump the board game. Ugh, no thanks. Costco is offering an apocalypse emergency kit in a bucket that provides 150 freeze-dried food servings with a shelf life of 25 years. Because if the apocalypse wasn't bad enough, they really want you to wish you were dead. As the ReadyWise emergency food supply bucket offers items like freeze-dried teriyaki rice, pasta, Alfredo, potato pot pie, and apple cinnamon cereal, with a combined total of 25,280 calories, or, as it is otherwise known, an average American dinner serving. That's it for the headlines today. We are going to be moving on to the biggest stories, starting with animal news. Animals! You love them, and you either want to take them into your home and hug them, or take them into your home and eat them after you've hugged them. But they sure are weird, right? They're weirder than the Republican Party trying to prove that they aren't, in fact, weird. And science is obsessed with just how weird they are. And that is why we love science, and should be giving it probably a lot more funding. Because these excellent seekers of knowledge have allowed us to bring you this round of animal news! Yeah! Let's get into it! Starting with the maybe horrifying news that Greenland sharks can live for centuries. Huh. Fun. Having an expected lifespan of at least 270 years, while some may live longer than 500 years. Obviously, the beauty industry has taken an interest in this biological marvel. After all, the females only become sexually reproductive at approximately 150 years old, so they can stay in the youthful stage for 150 years, and at 151, they will instantly be aged out for being an ancient sea hag. While it's clear that these Arctic sharks live a long time, it's unclear to scientists why. One theory is that gradually growing and maturing over a century simply sets them up for adult success, a strategy that some boomers have noticed that millennials slowly adopted over time in order to adapt to the rapidly deteriorating economy that boomers and Gen X had left them with. Ewan Camplison, a biologist pursuing a PhD at the University of Manchester, said, "I believe that if we can work out how the Greenland shark lives so long, and how they seem to be so resilient to age-related diseases such as cardiac disease, we may be able to improve the quality of life within the elderly human population. And to that I say, stop it! Stop it! Right now. Do you understand what you're playing with here? This is fire. Rupert Murdoch is 96. Why can't this wait? Why? We don't want him to have a single second of bonus time on this earth. Just calm down with your science and be patient. I'll come round and I'll tag you in myself when he's dead. You'll know because I'll be skipping down the street singing, "Ding dong, the witch is dead." It'll be quite clear when it's all happened. Zoos across North America are becoming concerned as gorillas have become obsessed with smartphones, as more and more visitors begin showing them images and videos on screen through the glass walls of their enclosures. And this might seem like a problem, given addicts tend to lash out when they can't get the source of their addiction, and gorillas are crazy strong! So, if we get them all addicted to phones, maybe if the time came and it was needed, we could fight them all out by putting on a midnight screening of Planet of the Apes on some sort of IMAX screen to distract them. It'd be like all their Christmases had come at once. Gorillas actually share 96% of their DNA with humans. In Toronto Zoo, officials began putting up signs last year urging visitors not to show their smartphones to the animals. One sign said, "For the well-being of the gorilla troop, please refrain from showing them any videos or photos as some content can be upsetting and affect their relationships and behaviour with their family." Oh, they really are just like us, aren't they? Ooh, that's worrying. They too have family events ruined when someone shows up at the holidays intent on telling you all about something that they found online that they think you really should consider, that maybe you're looking at it all wrong and you should think about it a different way. Eek. What's the harm? They're just asking questions, man. Why are you so closed-minded, man? Another 13 animals and plants have been added to Australia's list of threatened species, sparking the federal government to establish Australia's first national environmental protection body in order to enforce decisions made under environment laws to better protect Australian wildlife. Which will be a great place for us all to go live when renting becomes too expensive. Huh, no wonder they aren't planning to build government housing. We don't need government housing when we can have government tree housing. It's gonna be fun. The list of endangered animals includes the pig-nosed turtle and Pew's sphagnum frog. Sorry, frog, but you're not gonna make it. Not with a name like that. We can't even keep koalas off the endangered list, and people know what they are and can pronounce their names. So get in line behind Harold Holt, because we're never gonna see you again. Another animal on the list is the Hunter Valley Delma, known as the legless lizard, which was discovered 2 years ago in 2022. Oy. So you can see we've really gotten good at this speeding up the whole endangered species thing. We're basically experts now. We're doing speedruns at this point. Time now for NDIS follow-up news. Now, last episode we talked about the NDIS, the scheme apparently built to funnel endless amounts of money directly into the pockets of disabled Australians so that they can live a life of luxury with trips to Japan and sex workers and tarot readers telling them how to avoid getting caught using their flawless ability to look into the future. And it is with this in mind that we find ourselves in this position where the federal government has proposed excluding period products from the National Disability Insurance Scheme, despite research suggesting 78% of people with a disability who menstruate cannot afford them. The government was surprised at the pushback on this, as the entire NDIS is built on not providing people with the basic things that they need to either survive or live as close to a regular life with ordinary dignity as possible. I guess they just thought they were continuing a proud tradition of not providing. But why would such an item, a seemingly necessary item of great importance, be excluded from funding? Seems, under the new proposition, menstrual products are classified as an excluded item, as they are listed in the category of lifestyle related, which includes cigarettes and vapes, gambling, musical instruments, sports tickets, trampolines, and gaming consoles. Lifestyle related. Interesting. Real interesting choice of words there. I didn't realize women the world over were choosing to have periods, to have the period lifestyle. Why didn't you say anything, women? We could have got in on this. We could have scammed them together. You know, I'd be down to clown, right? Be it worry-free sex or a government scam, we could have worked something out, hey? And I must say, it's an impressive ruse that you all agreed, all of them, all women everywhere agreed to go along with it. And that the commitment to the bit is impressive. Choosing every month to go through 5 to 7 days of pain and bleeding, all on the off chance that you might one day get onto the NDIS and have them cover the cost of your sanitary items, which obviously you didn't actually need at all, so at which point you would stop living the lifestyle of a period haver and start using that excess money and spending up big. It's genius. No wonder they won't let you run the country. That level of deception is really impressive. Although, the government has your number, ladies, period owners, lifestyle choosers. The new draft proposal only allows funding for items on the list if they were costs were incurred solely and directly as a result of a person's disability. Check and mate, period havers! And obviously you've all chosen to activate your periods too early in order to keep this worldwide deception going, when really you should have waited until you became disabled in some way, enough to qualify for the NDIS. Then, once you were diagnosed and officially in the system, start having periods, right? Obviously, this is a direct result of becoming disabled because they weren't happening before. And voila, you get all the extra money that you need for sanitary products. Then, turn it off again. That would have been some real 4D chess, but you fucked it up. And this is why they won't let you run the country. This month, results from a survey by charity Share the Dignity, canvassing more than 153,000 people with periods, found about 1 in 3 struggled to afford menstrual products in the past year. Well, then I'm surprised that they didn't just choose not to have it, seeing as they couldn't afford them. Seems like the logical choice to me, man. If I couldn't afford them, I certainly wouldn't have them. Choosing to have a clean and dignified period rather than whipping off those pants and then running around pantsless and bleeding all over the floor. Seems like a no-brainer to me. The survey heard from people who described being unable to use tampons or pads due to limited hand function or motor impairment, and others dealing with health risks as a result of skin conditions or lack of sensation. Some described the real risk of toxic shock syndrome from disposable period products due to memory disassociation or executive function. Others relied on support workers to help them change products. I mean, if we're worried about spending money unnecessarily, having an army of NDIS workers on standby 24 hours a day in order to help recipients with their sanitary needs to stop them from dying, well, that seems like a much better use of public funding, certainly much better than spending a few dollars each month on tampons for individuals. Certainly much better than spending a few dollars a month on tampons or pads and allowing people the quiet dignity of maintaining their own life without having to summon someone every time they're not feeling right. But hey, you know better, so obviously you should spend the money how you see fit. Advocates say products like adaptable period underwear and tampon inserters are necessary to ensure those with physical and intellectual disabilities can manage bleeding without hurting themselves. But as always, detractors say that you need to tighten up your bootstraps and lift yourself up with such ferocity that you launch yourself into orbit so that you'll be free from the burden of gravity and be able to sort your own issues out. They are very helpful that way. This all follows revelations that the federal government's NDIS reviewer was briefed on focus group research that found more public support for cuts if those cuts were sold in concert with a believable story about the level of fraud in the program. Believable is an interesting and important term to use there, that's for sure. We, unfortunately, share the world with the Murdoch Press, who have proven time and again how little it takes for people to believe the worst of either the poor or immigrants or anyone who's just not them. It really doesn't take much to get people to believe. Just ask Twitter. I've never seen a bigger collection of people believe a bigger collection of garbage than I've witnessed in the downfall of Twitter. For absolutely no reason other than the owner is rich. It's just like the Murdoch Empire, if I'm honest. Weird. I wondered how the church got so many people to believe what is some real weapons-grade nonsense over time. But remember, the church is also rich! So now it all makes sense. People love to suck up to the rich. And anyone who is collecting money from the NDIS will never be rich. You hear me? Never! Not if Bill Shorten has anything to say about it, right? Got him. Hell, they won't even get to have the basic things that they need for survival. Not if Bill Shorten has anything to say about it. Got him again. After all, the shorter their life, the less we have to pay them from the public money. So really, he's doing this for you, the taxpayer. Moving on now, it's gambling ad news! We've all been bombarded with a plethora of ridiculous ads from sports betting companies encouraging us to take on some reckless behaviour, like smashing our head through our own ceiling, or equally as dangerous as placing a bet to win on St Kilda. I'm told that that is a sick burn. I wouldn't know. But people are tired of seeing 9 ads for Neds every commercial break and think that it's time that the government did some governing by banning advertising on commercial TV. However, some speed bumps have manifested, as according to Bill Shorten, free-to-air TV broadcasters are in diabolical trouble and many need gambling ad revenue to stay afloat. And not at all because of the ceaseless spray of low-quality programming that you've been putting to air since the writer's strike in 2007. No, that definitely doesn't have anything to do with it. It's certainly simply because of the ads. Each year more poorly made than the last, as you chase cheaper and cheaper productions in order to maximize the profits by cutting back on writers and actors, doing a fundamental disservice to the medium that you yourself need to survive by trying to turn the very shows that you are producing from programs with interesting ideas into content. 30 to 60 minute ads for useless garbage, while teams of people dragged in off the street run around a single room set, competing to see who can spout off the most vapid comment or get the next bum-bum dance happening so they can leverage this sale of dignity into an empty but financially lucrative influencer career, flogging whichever garbage pays the most and not bothering to due diligence by researching the company beyond whether or not a check will bounce. But no, it's not the TV's fault. It's the advertisers. That's the problem. Could be that. Or it could be the $600,000 that Federal Labor banked from gambling companies last year from its pay-for-access subscription packages for companies and executives, which, while they are technically donations in that the company is giving large sums of money and will receive favorable political influence as a response, they do still fly under the radar of donations as they aren't technically donations, and politicians love semantics. So why don't they count as donations? Let's get into it. Because despite top-tier access costing between $110,000 and $121,000, they aren't donating. As you see, they get something in return. So they are simply buying something instead. What are they buying? I mean, it must be fucking good for that price. Probably isn't some avocado toast and a side of eggs. Although, have you seen the price of groceries lately, huh? Huh? Got him. Take that, supermarkets. Let's just say, it isn't out of the realm of possibilities. What they are actually getting. So what are they actually getting for this money? They get 5 tickets to an end-of-year soiree with the Prime Minister. Very fancy. A soiree. Lovely. Okay, so, right, a little bit better than some toast and eggs. But given the price of groceries, $121,000, for Prime Ministerial access is genuinely the best bargain in town. That is discount access for a Prime Minister. And if someone gave me $600,000, I'd certainly remember to say nice things about them in the news. I'd probably defend them if some sort of inquiry came up about them. On an unrelated note, however, I'd just like to take a moment out of the podcast to say that in the past, I may have unfairly maligned some sections of Australian society. Like ticket inspectors. They aren't money-grubbing bullies out to take advantage of the weak and the confused in order to preserve their undeservingly high-paid jobs, ensuring people pay exorbitant amounts to access a public transport system that is in increasing decay and providing worse and worse service by the day. It's clear to me now that we would be in diabolical trouble without those ticket inspectors. And if the system is this bad with them, imagine how bad it would be without them. Ticket inspectors, they keep things running. But back to the story. Now that unrelated note is over. See, while donations to federal political parties above $16,300 must be disclosed annually to the AEC, turns out payments for events like, say, tickets to a lunch and dinner event or some sort of business subscription, which, by the way, is the worst kind of subscription. You don't even get some random hair trimmers for your balls or some sort of vegan snack that you'll never eat again. These generous spendings do not need to be declared. I do declare they do not need to be declared. The major political parties instead disclose the payments as other receipts, a term so vague that it should just be titled totally not shady shit. Don't look in here, it's definitely not secret donations or porn, so don't even look. Do you believe me? Good. Meanwhile, some companies such as Sportsbet are putting them on blast by voluntarily disclosing their political subscriptions to the AEC as donations, which is just delightful. Because if anyone knows not to take chances, it's Sportsbet, right? Shorten told ABC's Q&A that he was not convinced that complete prohibition works. Because if there is anything that has never worked in this country, it's the complete prohibition of it, right? That's why we still have so many mass shootings, despite John Howard's best efforts to prohibit gun access. You can't walk 20 minutes without tripping over another man's shooting. They litter the streets like the off-tempo rhythms of buskers covering a pop song in a down-tempo, one-man acoustic style. You are annoyed, but they are just part of the character of the city, and it would feel really empty if they were gone. If we were to ban gambling ads and companies were forced to rethink their business practices so that they could earn money without being reliant on some of the worst companies in the most loathsome business practices that damage the lives of everyday Australians, then that might set some sort of precedent that this kind of dark money is unacceptable to take. That mindset might start to permeate across the country as people realise their lives actually improve once the negative influence of 40 ads for Neds an hour shrivels and dies inside their brain like a parasitic worm in a presidential candidate's head. Should people realise that they might be better off without gambling, then they might demand of the governments that they also remove dark money from their coffers. And they can't do that. They need to use that money for good causes, of course. They need that money to fight the evil of gambling. You get it? Surely that money is better off in the hands of a government party who can use it to fight for the betterment of Australian citizens rather than, I don't know, gathering compound interest for gambling companies. That makes sense to me, right? Well, that's too bad. Because it's just going to Labour and the Coalition, but in theory, wouldn't that be great if somebody used that money in that way? And Labour certainly isn't using the TV industry as a proxy for themselves, expressing their own need for this filth money while protecting their political donors. Certainly not. Shorten denied Labour's policy was motivated by the election. Yeah. That's right, it's not motivated by the election, it's also motivated by their donations. Saying it is simply about the election is a very reductionist view of this very complicated issue, okay? Shorten said he believed in having a free-to-air media sector and did not want Mark Zuckerberg or Facebook in charge of my news feeds. He's not even paying the Australian media. You see that? You see what he did there? Fucking genius. I'm going to miss all these Shorten bangers when he goes. A reference, of course, to Facebook not re-upping its deal to shovel money to local media outlets like Sky News. But don't worry, Anthony Albanese has their back. He's looking after them. He has confirmed that government was also considering a social media levy to compensate traditional media companies for loss of revenue from Facebook's parent company, Meta, not renewing deals with media companies for showing news on social media feeds. So it sounds to me like they're not going to need gambling money anymore. The government will be providing all the traditional media outlets with taxpayer money instead. And that's much better. And just a fair warning. 7 News, 10 News, 9 News, and especially Sky News. If you're on the record receiving public funding, you best be adhering to the ABC's strict code of broadcast ethics that you love to throw in their face for taking public money. So no more inflammatory opinions, no more one-sided chasing people down the streets, screaming accusations at them in the form of questions. You need to act like grown-ups if you're going to be taking government money. We've heard for years how pissed off Sky News is about the fact that the ABC gets government money and they don't. And yet, the ABC is so biased to the left wing, not a single defamatory slur not even any pandering to baseless rumours, because they are what your listeners already believe, and you know it. It's just going to be facts, okay? No more of that garbage that you call reporting, just facts. Useless, these won't pay the bills, facts. And that's how we like it in this country. And if you don't like it, then you can leave. Moving on, it's disconnection news. France has led the world once more in innovation that we didn't know we needed, but we desperately wanted. A little thing that we now know as the right to disconnect. Who'd have thought that the country that threw off the shackles of the monarchy would be the first to turn to the 1% and say, don't think that it can't happen to you too. We still own guillotines. And now, Australian employees also have the right to ignore their bosses outside working hours, thanks to a new law which enshrines the right to disconnect. Look, we're still working on the right to message your boss with a hearty, yep, fuck, this is my time now, without getting fired. But hang on, baby steps, alright? Baby steps. Once the law came through, Labor was quick to jump up and claim responsibility for it, despite it being chaired by the Greens initially, because they are very excited to be able to legally disconnect from having to do anything about refugees in detention camps and coal mines. After all, it's after 5 o'clock somewhere, so we don't have to do anything. We have the right to disconnect. Look, fair warning though, employers will still be able to contact the workers. It's just staff will now have the right not to respond outside working hours unless that refusal is unreasonable. Unreasonable. My definition of unreasonable versus my boss's definition will certainly be very different when, like, for example, that I thought it was unreasonable for a customer to call me a cunt and be allowed to stay in the store, but my boss thought differently, and then not only let them stay, told me to avoid them so there wouldn't be any more trouble, and didn't think that was unreasonable. So you know what I mean? Like, definitions, they shift. While the Fair Work Commission will make the final decision on whether a refusal is unreasonable or not, in order to do so, it must take into account factors like the employee's role, the reason for the contact, and how it was made. And I think it's reasonable to have a list that will form a base level of understanding about what won't be considered reasonable. This is going to be a hard transition for a lot of needy bosses. I've never worked in a job that anyone would ever consider important. Even when the pandemic hit, my last job wasn't considered essential work. And yet they still felt it was necessary to call me at weird hours and make sure that I was still engaged with my work. Weird. But now, the right to disconnect allows workers to switch off after hours and choose not to engage with work communications, instead allowing for much needed time crying, venting to our partner or housemate, pacing around the home, or building a much needed blanket fort to crawl into as a desperation caterpillar before you curl up into an anxiety cocoon for the night, so that you can emerge in your final form, the beautiful but short-lived stress butterfly. Those 8 hours of essential time spent not worrying about work, but instead being able to worry about things at home. Have I ruined my kids' lives? Will I have enough money to retire? What's that smell in the ceiling? When was the last time that I saw the cat? These are important things, allowing a perfect balancing of work stress and home stress. And as I said, France was the first country to adopt the law, making it mandatory for companies with more than 50 employees to establish parameters for after-hours communication back in 2016. Because the French know that if you don't look after the working class, they will present you with a situation that would make any world leader Les Miserables. When it comes to riots, France has always been ahead of the pack, if you follow my meaning. The French court even ordered a company to compensate an employee who was required to constantly keep their work phone on, which is why French lords now need to think long and hard before rejecting a stranger who comes calling at the door. Having an entire staff turn into household furniture and live in your home and spontaneously prepare meals, songs, and negotiate your love life is going to be a real costly endeavor. Other countries have adopted similar regulations on the right to disconnect, including Belgium, Italy, Argentina, Chile, Luxembourg, Mexico, Philippines, Slovakia, Spain, Ontario, Ireland, and surprisingly, Russia. Though in Russia, invoking the right to disconnect has been known to result in employees coming down for severe case of defenestration or spending their precious time off overindulging in poison. They did try to phrase this in a way that businesses would understand by talking about how much money they'd save. Professor Emmanuel Josarand, an expert of the impact of innovation and director of the Business Insights Institute at UNSW, said, "A recent Safe Work Australia report on psychological health and safety in the workplace indicates a significant rise in work-related mental health problems, especially amongst women, leading to more time loss and compensation for injuries and illness." Get it now? Do you understand now? He sort of screamed under his breath. Though you'd think the way Sky News is responding to this.
But just quickly, an answer from each of you. I'll start with you, Carrie. But it's not about fixing a problem here. There is no problem. Isn't it just the government doing what its union masters dictate?
That Labor had personally gone around and kicked each of their puppies in the face, laughed, and then pissed their signature across the carpet for every business owner in the country, all at the behest of their union masters. At this point, you wouldn't know that Labor had joined forces with the coalition to force their way into the construction division of the CFMEU after Nine published a series of allegations about criminal infiltration of the union, bullying and bribery. Allegations that have not been proven or resolved. By the way, just letting you know that, it's important to know that. And while this absolutely needs to be investigated, this response is grossly disproportionate and forms a part of a bizarre trend of anti-worker behaviour from parliamentary bodies, refusing to take basic and logical measures to protect citizens in a number of vulnerable positions. The precedent this sets is incredible, almost as inconceivable as it is obviously a ploy from the coalition. People are now going to think that this is okay, that the government can just step in and pull apart a union based on unproven allegations. And you better believe, when they get back in power, that the coalition will be doing this again. This is an attempt to blame the corruption of an entire industry on workers fighting to protect their rights, and the damage is done. It's already built into the system now. After this government intervention, people who don't look too deeply into these things will continue to say things like, "Well, why should I join my union? Didn't I hear something about union corruption a little while ago? No, no, best we not get in bed with corrupt gangsters." While they themselves also try to battle against the corrupt gangsters of the owning class, be they our CEO using questionable tactics, bosses bullying employees to do things like work extremely long hours or be available to contact 24 hours a day, or government forces trying to undermine the working man by forcibly deconstructing the very few means they have of self-defense. You get it now, right? You understand the problem? This was probably seen as an issue that if they didn't jump on immediately, the coalition would start to use as a cudgel at next year's election. But this simply means that the coalition now has what they've always wanted, the power to destroy unions at the slightest hint of trouble, removing a valuable source of Labor's political finances, but again, weakening the very few means that workers actually have to defend themselves. Now, I hate to sound like a broken record here, but if we aren't hitting the same point home again and again and again, it'll just get lost in all of the talk of corruption. Unions protect you. even the corrupt ones. They might not do it in the best way, but they're there to protect you. And once we weed out the few corrupt bad eggs, we can get back to protecting. And I will reiterate, this is unproven. There has been no investigation and no flow of natural justice. And somehow, they will try to swing this in a way that says that they are pro-union. And that when the election rolls around, they'll still be telling us how that they're the party of the workers and how they're pro-union, or demonstrably pulling apart the support beams of one of the largest, most powerful unions Australia has ever known. Imagine if they put this much scrutiny into other institutions that actually were found to have had corrupt members. Case in point, a Guardian Australia investigation found that police forces around Australia have fielded hundreds of complaints about misuse of information, and in particular, unauthorised access of internal police databases. Since 2020, maybe you don't count that as corruption, merely abuse of power. Okay, alright, I see you, oh pedantic one, and I raise you the Royal Commission into New South Wales Police Service, which produced 6 volumes of findings, which resulted in hundreds of corrupt police resigning or being dismissed. Yet weirdly, they don't rush to completely dismantle the police, despite this proof of corruption. There has been allegations of corruption in esports, with the Esports Integrity Commission receiving around 100 match-fixing, cheating, and other corruption allegations every day. And sure, not all of these complaints are credible. Stephen Hanna, ESIC's Global Strategy Director, said, if you look at another sport like cricket, they probably have between 4 and 6 major fixing investigations annually. We have 14, and that was basically picked up in the span of 3 months, and they're all fairly major. Ruh-roh, guess it's time to shut down esports then. This year, 3 A-League players were charged over an alleged betting corruption scandal orchestrated by an overseas criminal figure. So we have criminals and potential corruption. Bye-bye A-League. Crown Casino and Star Groups committed several breaches against the country's anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism financial act and paid $450 million in fines. But they're still operating in every state. Yeah, no heavy-handed investigation to pull apart the casinos, even after Crown was credibly accused of links to organized crime, insider trading, money laundering, illegal modification of gaming machines, drug trafficking, and more. And maybe the biggest one, Gladys Berejiklian was found guilty of corruption, plain and simple. But despite her being one bad apple, they didn't take apart the New South Wales arm of the coalition, no matter how much it deserved to be pulled right off the body. Australia itself has a reputation for corruption. As a country, did you know that? Our reputation has remained steady in the latest world rankings. Yeah, there's world rankings for corruption. The annual Corruption Perceptions Index, which I bet you didn't know was a thing, released by Transparency International, placed Australia at 14th, maintaining a score of 75 out of 100. So I guess it's time to make the Indigenous population happy and break up the Commonwealth of Australia, as it has proven itself a nightmarish body of corruption and mustn't be allowed to continue. Moving on now, we've got meme news. Yes, memes from the early days of I Can Has Cheeseburger to the internet's meme flavour of the month, B-Girl Raygun. Memes have saved us the trouble of actually having to come up with words, ideas, or even jokes of our own when life becomes exactly what they designed it to be. Just fucking too much. But hey, we'll always have memes, right? Right? Tell me we'll always have memes. Maybe not, as researchers have warned, excess memes and reply-all emails are bad for the climate. Okay. And I don't mean the emotional climate. No, no. No matter how many well-placed Charlie with a wall of string doing the conspiracy thing meme you throw in the comments, I mean the climate. The climate change climate. You know the climate. You know the one that I mean. Turns out every time we share the "this is fine" dog in the house on fire meme, we are increasingly turning into said dog with the house on fire meme. But Wes instead saying, "This is fun. We're having fun, right? We're doing it. This is what fun looks like, right?" How do we get to this point? And aside from a ravenous love of meme culture, I mean. Of course, research has now found that the vast majority of data stored in the cloud is what they call dark data, meaning just like a Dan Brown novel, it's used once and then never visited again. Meaning that all of the memes and jokes and GIFs, yeah, I said GIFs, suck it up, that we share in place of genuine human connection, friends and family are out there somewhere, in a mysterious cloud somewhere. Sitting in some data center somewhere, using up energy. Just like me, when I was working in a call center. Just sitting around somewhere, using up energy. Data centers like these are increasingly popping up. At this point, they are like the warehouse where they store the Ark of the Covenant, but instead they're full of the dankest memes and the sassiest gifs that all once made for a cutting remark or the perfect exclamation on the end of a comment thread, but have since been locked away, hidden to protect the world from their cutting sass. By 2030, the UK National Grid anticipates these will account for just under 6% of the UK's total electricity consumption. Total. Across the country. Wild. The UK isn't even a huge country, but 6% of their electricity usage, that's more than the entire Philippines use in a year. So tackling junk data is an important part of tackling the climate crisis. Ian Hodgkinson, a professor of strategy at Loughborough University, has been studying the climate impact of dark data and how it can be reduced. He discovered that 68% of data used by companies is never used again, and estimates that personal data tells the same story. It's a tale as old as time. Businesses waste their power and destroy the world while individuals are told to pick up their game and start acting right before we destroy the world. Ugh, we know it well. It's a dance that we're all very familiar with and quite good at. Tell you what, oil companies, I'll make you a deal. I'll stop posting memes about what a terrible job you're doing when you stop doing a terrible fucking job. Cloud operators and tech companies have a financial incentive to stop people from deleting junk data, as the more data that is stored, the more people pay to use their systems. I mean, look how popular our data storage is. We only store the finest data, the dankest memes, by the bucket load. This is the new diamond trade, right? They are artificially creating scarcity to drive up the price. There's plenty of diamonds. There's heaps of storage. Don't worry about it. Stop being a cunt. Stop charging people that way. Nobody's gonna be sad if you junk the memes. We'll start again. We'll build a new society. A better society. With blackjack and new memes! Hodgkinson said, "We're paying for that storage. Now, effectively, you're paying for something which you're not ever going to use again because you're not even aware it exists. And when we think about the significant costs it has for financial terms, but also the environment, to the bigger picture, we're falling short of the required trajectory to meet that net zero by 2050. We need net zero memes by 2050, guys! We need to counter our meme usage with environmental strategies. If you want a meme, you gotta pay the climate price. That's right. You need to pay some sort of carbon capture tax every time you post a meme. Or maybe, more impactfully, you'll need to leave your home and plant a tree, which you will then post a picture of. you know, of you planting that tree, and then put that online, and into needing to have to plant another tree. So an endless cycle of plants for posts will continue. Until the day that we post a photo of us, all of humanity, standing over the grave of climate change, posing like we're having a party because we finally killed our arch nemesis, ourselves. If you think that I'm being hyperbolic, this isn't just me saying this. This is old mate Hodgkinson. He said, "We know through forecasts that in the next year or two, if we take all the renewable energy in the world, that wouldn't be enough to accommodate the amount of energy data requires." Armageddon! It's Armageddon! You hear that meme, pages? It's Armageddon. Turns out, all your memes have turned out to be milkshake ducks as they secretly destroyed the environment. All your memes are belong to darkness and destruction. Climate change is dragging you by the hand, but you are desperately looking back as making a joke about climate change walks past you seductively. Ooh. We all need to back into the bushes out of shame. Though now you may be chronicling your memory and contemplating how much compensation you owe the Earth, none, however, are more guilty than BuzzFeed. Yeah, BuzzFeed, we got your number. This black hole of memes sucking in all the internet left lying around and repurposing it. At the time, we saw it as a greedy, empty reposting of work produced by others for capitalist gain. But weirdly, now, turns out they were ahead of the game. They're, in fact, recycling your old memes. It's reduce, reuse, recycle, in that order. And they certainly were never going to reduce, so reuse it was. That's how it was always going to be. And boy, did they ever reuse. They reused again and again and again. So, some of those memes actually got a second life, a third life, maybe even a 12th life. But they are now all trapped in BuzzFeed purgatory. And BuzzFeed owes us big time. They need to plant the equivalent of the Amazon forest to make up for all the memes that they stole and reposted. And finally, it's science news! Science continues its relentless crusade on ignorance of the natural order. If science had its way, we'd know the holistic way in which everything impacts everything else, turning the world into some kind of natural Rube Goldberg machine where everything is designed to either kill or heal everything else. And it is because of this that we find ourselves on a new scientific precipice, as scientists have discovered the parasite Toxoplasmosis gondii, which you may know as the source of the neurological disorder toxoplasmosis, which is found in soiled cat litter, could be a key to curing Alzheimer's and other neurological disorders. Scientists are now scrambling to protect the most precious resource of all, cat ladies, the number one source of exposure to toxoplasmosis around the world. If you don't know, and that's totally fine, toxoplasmosis is a neurological disorder caused by the parasite Toxoplasmosis gondii. It has evolved to make mice attracted to cat urine so that they will get eaten by the cats, and then the parasite can return to its natural spawning ground, the cat's stomach. It's like when salmon swim upstream to return to their breeding grounds, but in this case, the stream is a stream of cat urine, and they don't swim so much as pilot a tiny mouse submarine into the heart of death. It's able to do this because once infected with the brain parasite, it triggers an increase in exploratory behaviors, and the mice basically lose their fear of predators, particularly cats. It decreases their anxiety. Oh! So they're just acting like me in my 20s after a few too many drinks. I get it. I understand now. And much like Matt in his 20s, they are more likely to get eaten. Scientists use an engineered form of Toxoplasmosis gondii to deliver proteins to the brain in mice because of the parasite's ability to cross what they call the blood-brain barrier, meaning that it can safely enter the brain without causing some kind of brain damage, which is ideal most of the time. Because if I'm being honest, sci-fi hasn't really come up with a good, plausible zombie-slash-disaster delivery system for a good long while. It's been a hot minute, right? It's been all viruses and mushrooms for way too long. We need some new science, some new fictional science-based shenanigans. It's a particularly interesting method of science fiction shenanigans because of its impact on the body. It has a number of pretty terrible side effects, but most notably, it can give humans more courage and help them overcome their fear of failure. Unlike the similarly named Toxoplasmosis Gandhi, which causes people to adopt a policy of mass disobedience and non-violent resistance, but also causes them to obsess with their own celibacy and in their late 70s, before they die at 78, sleep naked with their grandniece, who was in their late teens, just to test your willpower to abstain from sex. This lack of fear, however, is the perfect way to develop super soldiers. Fearless killing machines who, due to their inability to get Alzheimer's, will never get to forget the atrocities of what they did for their country. And possibly, they'll just really love the smell of cat piss. Well, that's the end of the episode, guys. Thanks so much for hanging around and coming all the way to the end. I really appreciate you doing your thing. Like I said at the top, if you want, you can join the Patreon. I genuinely appreciate it if you did. Otherwise, maybe come out to one of the live shows. Like I said, I'll be in Wollongong, I'll be in Canberra, I'll be in Albury, and I'll be doing the Melbourne Fringe. So if you've got a chance, if you know anyone in those areas, do send them my way. I'd really appreciate that. But thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, whatever you get up to. Thank you so much, and goodbye.